Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, it was our fault. We made a mistake. Spotter said it was clear. I wasn't clear, and, you know, I didn't want to tear my car up, tear his car up either. I respect everybody, and I demand respect. And, you know, I apologized to the guy when he came over the car, explained to him what happened, and then he took it to another level when he started calling me an idiot and whatever else. And I don't appreciate that. I'm not going to take it. I told him how I feel. I called him out. He didn't show. You know, so, you know, I'm good with it if he's good with it, but I'm not going to be disrespected by no means.
Yeah, I guess I had a dinner date at Applebee's last night that I didn't find out until it was too late. It's a shame. Love their riblets and boneless wings, but...
All right, folks, it's time for the final trip to Applebee's for 2023. It's me, Brian, with Rob and Ashley, as always, folks. How we doing this week?
Shut down by the health department, so not too good, I guess. We're going to have to find somewhere else to go, but I'm doing good personally. How about you, True Love?
I'm great. I'm really in the Christmas spirit here.
Yeah, that's good. Well, speaking of just the health department thing made me think of already going way off topic here, but in Albuquerque back home, there's a local segment or a segment on the local news called Red or Green, which is a reference to the chili we have there, red chili, green chili, whatever. When you put them together, it's Christmas, so that's thematic, I suppose. But anyway, there's a segment on the local news about who got a red sticker for failing health inspections every week. And this Applebee's is in the red category, so if it were in Albuquerque, it'd be prominently featured on KOAT, but yeah, it is what it is. But anyway, whatever we're doing here.
Aside from health code violations, there's not a whole lot to talk about this week, as we kind of expected. It was a pretty slow week as far as any sort of motorsports news. The only things I can think of are Ryan Blaney getting engaged, which he prophetically called out about 12 years ago, stating on Twitter that he wishes he could marry his Hooters waitress, and then all of a sudden he has one. So was good for him.
Was it the same waitress?
No, I'm going to say it wasn't. I don't think it was. Yeah. I don't think Ryan Blaney has been with this chick for 12 years, but no. I could be.
He is the type.
I'm not wrong.
He could have been going to the same Hooters for that long, though. You never know.
Could have.
I think she would have been like 12 years old or something. When.
Yeah, what are the labor laws like in Mooresville?
I don't. I don't think Hooters is going to hire any underage girls to in those outfits. They're not that stupid.
Yeah, well, you know.
Anyways, that's the first slightly cancelable thing we'll say on this episode.
I think she was from Florida.
Strike one, yeah.
So there was that news. And speaking of Hooters, Hendrick released a bunch of horrible paint schemes on their cars, which nobody seems to like.
I like the Hooters scheme.
I like the Hooters one, too.
I hated his fire suit, but I like the scheme. I like the burn orange.
Well, I'm just speaking for all of what I saw on social media. A lot of people were saying the cars were horrible. I don't have much of an opinion because it's a Hooters car and it's not going to win anyways, but that's a different story.
They ought to put a, on Chase's fire suit, they ought to put like a big old like bikini top on there, you know? Like a flesh color, the bikini top, a big old set.
Amazing.
You know what I mean? That would sell it for me. Or like the little, like the image of a visage of a Hooters like belly shirt, you know?
That would be amazing.
Wouldn't make me a fan, but it would certainly send me along the right direction if they were to do that. So,
it would definitely confuse merch, a few kids in the audience.
Yeah, we live in confusing times. So
yeah, I couldn't do any appearances at like Garrett Jones reading with kids and that.
No. Yeah, PRI happened as we were recording the last episode, or that was in the middle of it happening. So a lot of the big news announcements all happened last week. And we kind of talked about them. So, yeah, definitely a slow news week. We actually broke the news that Noah Gragson's going to SHR. So there's that. Thad Moffitt's big thing we already talked about. Who the fuck else? There's got to be something that happened other than Brian Blaney going to Hooters for 20 years or whatever.
Josh Berry's getting Chase's old spot.
That's right. Eddie DeHaan. Yeah. That's right. But, yeah, I guess that's
about it.
That's about it. cool. Well, see you next year, guys. Have a good night.
There was one race to talk about. The Dome Gateway Nationals happened.
That's right.
I know both Rob and I watched. Rob, I'm sure, watched more than I did. I watched some of Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Yeah, I tried as much as I could. It's Christmas hell over here. I'm going to parties like every weekend, so like, I'm the guy who's, you know, drinking a beer in the corner on his phone all night. Having to explain to people that I'm not watching NASCAR, and then just you know, kind of letting that slide. But yeah, it was fun. My friend of the program, Kyle Armstrong, went. I feel like I mention him every episode, but he does a lot more cool shit than I do when it comes to racing. So him and old Kim Bob went out to the Gateway and almost didn't make it, along with Carson Hocevar. I guess he was on the same flight as them, and it took him like. It got delayed by like 8 hours and had to like divert to Chicago and all kinds of shit. They even took off and flew around Charlotte for an hour and had to land. I don't know. They almost didn't make it. Carson Hocevar almost didn't make it. But when he did show up, he totally misunderstood what a Delaware restart was and fucking took out Jason Fager. And that was pretty much it. So for Carson's Gateway run anyway. I don't know if you guys saw that or not, but yeah, he's managing to remind people of why they don't like him in the dirt world as well as the pavement world. So,
whoops.
But it was fun. Saturday night was a blast. Again, it's one of those deals where like there's a lot of like waiting time to get the track as right as possible. This time it wasn't track conditions necessarily because it's always going to be rutted out inside. But it was like fixing holes in the fence when cars would go through them.
Yeah, that was weird. That happened a couple times.
Yeah, happened a lot. Yeah. But yeah, Brandon Shepherd taking a big win there. Ricky Thornton Jr. Putting on a hell of a show trying to get there.
He really swung for the fences in that that turn one and two, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, RTJ knocks the deck out of it on his way to try and catch Brandon Shepherd, but to no avail. So Brandon Shepherd gets to take home whatever the trophy is there. I don't think they have like a cool trophy or anything like that there. I don't know what it would even be at a dome, but... anyway, good amount of money to bring home. So good for him. By the time that feature wrapped up, I was pretty drunk after coming home from a Christmas party, and I fell asleep on my couch, such as tradition. And I missed Drake Troutman winning the modified feature, which also featured Ricky Thornton Jr. So, yeah,
not Kenny Wallace, unfortunately.
No, Kenny Wallace missed the show. He got hung up in the B main and unfortunately couldn't repeat his heroics from last year, making it in the show at the 11th hour. But yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. Again, it's definitely a little more of a, I don't want to say less serious version of dirt racing, and especially the dirt late model side of things. But it's a little more playful, and it's a little bit more Bowman Gray than your average dirt race, I would say. But from everything I heard from Kyle and Ken and Andy from Andy's Towing and the Andy's Towing Pavilion, which also set up inside the stadium, which is good to know. This is a must-see event, so I'm probably going to have to add this to my list of things to do. It already was on the list, but it just looks fun as fuck. But oddly enough, not the only indoor race of the weekend. The Power Eye Midgets were in DuCoin, and Thomas Meserol picked up a win over Ryan Timms and a few other big-time midget guys. So we are fully into indoor season here. And, yeah, that's pretty much the entirety of the short track world right there. Late model guys are all trying to figure out how to pay for tires next year, you know, working shifts at the Piggly Wiggly or whatever it takes, you know. Asking dad to, you know, sell a couple more jobs at the construction company or
Santa to put a few under the tree.
Yeah, Santa. Asking Santa for a set of four Hoosiers to go down to Five Flags coming up in January. But yeah, it was a fun race. Again, Gateway is never, the Gateway Dirt Nationals. It's not really a perfect picture of what dirt late model racing in particular is, but pretty average for what a modified race is, I guess, on dirt, especially those UMP guys. So, but it was a blast, and again, if you missed out, all the highlights are on YouTube and shit, and it's definitely worth a watch, because that late model feature in particular was fucking killer.
Yeah.
And you had Tyler Erb lighting up a cigarette in driver intros in honor of his dad. That was pretty tight. Well, they do these, wrestling-style intros. where all 20 drivers get to come out, and some people just like parade their families out there. It's kind of whatever. But Tyler, he won last year's edition, and his dad died that same week, and he didn't say a damn thing about it to anybody, and didn't say anything to the media or anything like that until he won. He got out with a car in victory lane and told everybody that his dad had passed away. And he was, I guess they referred to him as the Marlboro Man. So I don't think a lot of people picked up on that. I think most folks tuning in just thought it was just a dude lighting up a cigarette inside.
I mean, it checks out.
No matter how you slice it, everyone said fuck yeah to that. Yeah. I'm a Tyler Herb fan, and I wanted to see him do a little bit better. But he got the Champions Provisional, had to start for the back, and did put on a show coming up through the field. But, yeah, again, it's a fun, especially when nothing else is going on. Like, this is a good reason to get a subscription of some sort like this, because you have shit to watch in December, and it's a little more entertaining than a lot of the shit we see throughout the year. But that's pretty much everything that happened in the short track world. I guess we're unofficially in the septic tank here, and we can probably climb back out now. Nothing really happened under the high limit World Outlaws thing either. Pretty much all the major players are set in stone here. Most of the championship contenders in the World of Outlaws side are there. From last year, minus Brad Sweet, of course, and then over on the high limit all-star side of things, it's everyone you'd expect. So we're going to have two sprint car series full of with compelling championship battles and a lot of talent, and of course there'll be crossover throughout the year. And yeah, I guess that's pretty much all there is up until we get to the Tulsa Shootout, which starts on the 27th. So
yeah, which we you know, we'll have to catch up on that when we are back from our break towards the end of January. But, you know, it is what it is. So, yeah, I guess, you know, like we said last week, we said at the start of the show, this is our last episode of 2023. And, yeah, our first full year is in the books. And I guess this last episode, I think what the best thing to do is just kind of recap our year as race fans. Not so much race as we saw on TV, because who the hell cares about that? But we all had our different experiences. You know, we didn't have our group trio Applebee's trip just yet, unfortunately. No. I guess that'll have to wait till 2024. But we all did some stuff this year, and before we get into the good stuff, let's all agree that the one shitty thing for all of our racing seasons was the rain.
Oh, God, yeah. 100%.
I think every single one of us had the majority of our race trips hampered by rain in some way. You know, I'm sure, like I said, we all dealt with it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think
600 was the worst for me.
Oh, that's right. They rained for that, too. Yeah, you were there, like, fucking Thursday, right?
I felt like it.
Yeah, I would say almost every time I have plans to go to one of my local short tracks here, Stafford, Thompson, Seekonk, whatever, the rain interfered. And it sort of, for me, it became a sort of a chase to just get to the fucking racetrack. It was almost like, I'm not making plans anymore. It was like, is the weather clear? What am I doing this weekend? Sorry, Caddy, who's my wife. I'm going to the racetrack. I'll see you on Sunday. Kind of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. Yeah, the weather was by far the shittiest thing about this year across the board. Whether it was NASCAR, short track, whatever the fuck it is, we all got screwed by Mother Nature this year.
Yeah, for sure. Oddly enough, though, there was actually one time I think it made it more interesting, and that was when me and Ashley saw the rain tires at North Wilkesboro. Thankfully, rain didn't really fuck the weekend up bad there. It was really a couple brief showers, but getting to see those guys run those tires, which was a, you know, hadn't happened on an oval at all yet, and it made for the racing probably at least temporarily more interesting than it would have been with just normal tires. So that was the one time where it actually kind of benefited us, but the rest of the year, just awful dog shit. Ruined a bunch of trips, shortened races, you know, wasted money, wasted time, but it's part of the racing experience, and it's something we'll all have to deal with until nuclear winter takes us all.
Yeah, it's a completely indoor schedule by that time. So. That's one thing I'm looking forward to about the Chili Bowls, that the weather is not going to be a factor, at least for the racing anyway. I could get snowed into that fucker, but at least I'll still run midgets, so it could be worse.
Yeah, I've Now that you mention that, I've never actually been to any indoor race like that. I've seen indoor ice racing on, you know, like flat track bikes, supercross, monster trucks, but never any cars of any type race indoors.
Yeah, it's definitely outlaw kart season up here. There's a lot of micro sprints and sort of shit running in arenas up here in Allentown and all that. That's kind of a big deal. A lot of the modified guys and both pavement and dirt from around here will go run those events in Allentown and Jersey City and all that shit, and it looks fun. I'd like to go, but again, it's just not quite at the top of my to-do list yet. Is indoor racing a thing down south, True Love?
Not to my knowledge.
Yeah,
I've never seen it advertised. I've definitely never been to one except for monster trucks, so
yeah
I know there were a few indoor races at like the Superdome years and years ago. Not Superdome, the Silverdome.
Yep.
In the 80s, but yeah, definitely nothing like that would be happening here now for sure. But yeah, so that's the bad part of the year. Let's talk about the things that we loved. I mean, again, we all went to a ton of different races. Let's start with Rob. Give us one of your favorite weekends, favorite races, favorite race experiences of 2023.
I mean, there's been a lot of them this year, despite all the bitching. Even with the weather, you know, I had a great time. But that there's, I guess, gotta say, going to Eldora with Kyle and Ken Bob and the whole gang, that was far and away the most fun I've ever had at a racetrack. And I have a good time when I go, whether it's by myself or with friends or whatever it is. But just what a special introduction to that place. And again, I just want to thank Kyle and Ken, Kyle in particular, for opening his RV up. And again, like, I feel like when you look back at events in your life and things you do, there's always like one or two highlights that sort of make the thing memorable, you know? There's like a story or two that you tell. But for me, I can't even, after we did the episode, after I went to the Dream, I don't even think I touched 10% of what I wanted to talk about. Obviously, we don't have 4 hours to do a fucking podcast, but like every moment of the trip, there was just something new and cool. The entire experience from the time I stepped on the plane. And again, there was no real preparation for it. I decided a week before that I was going to go.
Yeah.
So, and again, the weather was absolutely perfect. Which I'm sure made it all that much sweeter for me at the time. But yeah, just what a sweet experience that was. And again, I know it wasn't one of the more fantastic events at Eldora we've seen. The track conditions were a big deal there, but it kind of didn't matter, to be honest with you. And it was cool to see Jonathan Davenport win something. I feel like he's up until the last World Finals I went to, he's won almost everything I've seen. But it was no surprise to see him get that done. But yeah, just a great time with a bunch of good friends. And it's one thing to go to a racetrack on your own or to not have somebody who's been there for a long time. And it's another to have like a Sherpa sort of like Kyle is to really show you what's going on. And on top of that, Eldora already having one of the friendliest groups of people just as a whole to go to that racetrack for these big events. It's again, I can't speak highly enough of it. Like I said, I don't really have a particular moment that stood out the most, but just so many moments of just sitting there in a chair, you know, in turn one, just with my mouth kind of open, you know, like, what the fuck? I can't believe I'm here, you know. I guess that probably is the highlight, just trying my best to accept the fact that I'm experiencing this incredible thing and finally getting that experience and trying to realize that in real time, because I feel like a lot of the times as humans, we tend to not do that. You know, it's always on to the next thing or whatever, but just like really live, being able to have that moment, to actually live within that moment and enjoy it for what it was while it was happening. It was special beyond motorsports. So again, thanks to Kyle. Really, really can't thank him enough for extending that invitation to me and allowing me to come in there. And that wasn't even like the only good time I had this year. It's just
that's one of them. We'll get into a few more, but Ashley, let's give you the next slot here. Give us one of your favorite experiences.
I mean, one of my, I guess, three was definitely that whole week at North Wilkesboro.
I was gonna say it has to be Wilkesboro, right?
I mean, say going the year before to see Dale Jr. run that late model race when the place was very much still like falling down, decrepit.
Yeah.
That experience that'll never be topped. But this one this year, seeing it redone and how well they did that and how like the energy of that place the whole week with everyone that was there was like a whole different North Wilkesboro experience. So, yeah, just that whole week, you know, we saw the, I saw the late models run, you know, Dale Jr., Chase ran, the fan day that they had. I mean, Brian was here for some of those days too, so I don't know if it's on his list or not, but.
No, you know, it would have been like tied, either tied for third or like my fourth, mainly because it kind of touching on a little bit of what Rob said with like his Eldora experience. It's like, it was amazing to be there. It was amazing to, you know, get to this track that nobody ever thought would get back to where it is now, let alone have a race at all on it.
Right.
And, I would say if the racing was a little bit better, that would have enhanced the experience a little bit. But, I mean, overall, it was surreal.
You got a
surreal.
Classic North Wilkesboro experience. That's how it was back in the day, too.
I guess.
The late model racing was fantastic, though. So.
Yeah.
And the truck race was, okay, compared to the cup race.
They ran more on the rain tires than the cup guys did, though. And again, that was, to me, that was all I needed to see. That just put grooves in these fucking tires and let these guys slide around. But yeah, I was so jealous of you guys getting to experience that. Again, I've seen North Wilkesboro in its pre-renovation stage when it was kind of falling apart and, you know, just standing on the grounds, which you kind of alluded to this, Brian, it's just being at the racetrack alone has its own feeling, and you can feel the ghosts and the spirit of the place without even seeing a lap being turned. And I can't even imagine what it's like for it to be a live racetrack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much alive, very much packed.
Yeah.
We also got to meet Dale Jr. for the first time that week, so that was also a highlight of mine for the year.
That's awesome.
Yeah, of course. I'm going to say...
While Brian was holding your cooler?
Yes, while Brian was holding my cooler. Yeah, I didn't want to mention that, but thanks for bringing it up, Rob.
Yeah, you know, that's what I'm here for.
So sure, that was a highlight for Brian this year.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I guess it's so hard to figure out which one to start with, but I guess I'll start with the one I guess was probably the quickest weekend overall, but it would have been the trip to Atlanta. Because A, it was a new track I'd never been to before. B, it was with a bunch of old friends that a lot of them I haven't seen in years. And C, it was also getting to bring more people to their first race, which is something I haven't done in quite some time. And to kind of see them all get into it. You know, they all had at least experienced NASCAR in some level before, but only one of them had ever actually been to a race before. And, you know, the race itself was unfortunately, again, one of those rain shortened events, but it was really good up until it had to end. And it definitely makes me want to go back to Atlanta. I know we've talked about, like, that same group of guys. You know, we've all kind of talked about which one we want to go to, whether it be February or the summer or what, but we're all just kind of waiting to figure that out, because that's one of those races that I don't think it necessarily sells out too fast. So, you know, you don't need to have to decide that tomorrow or anything, but
yeah,
I love that experience. And that Atlanta was another track that I guess I never really thought I'd even go to. Like, obviously every track is on the list, but it was never one where I needed to go to. And yeah, I don't know. I really enjoyed the experience. You know, got to see True Love for a second. Super hot day, but up until the rain, it was great. And got to see Chris Benoit's house. So
fuck yeah.
Brian has been talking about checking off his list for years.
Yeah, a lot of check marks on that.
Yeah, for sure.
And you went to Babyland too, so.
I didn't go there.
You didn't go to Babyland.
Mike, who was also on the, you know, who came on the show or was with me, he went, but I didn't get to go.
Next time.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to go to Atlanta too. I've actually never seen a super speedway style race or a plate race or whatever they call it now. And I feel like obviously Daytona's on the list, but seeing it in such a small venue like that, to call Atlanta small, I guess, is kind of comical, but it's certainly smaller than Talladega and Daytona, and it's definitely easier to get to. I think. So maybe I'll have to tack that on the list for next year as well.
Well, yeah, what's your next favorite experience aside from Eldora?
Well, God, there's so many of them this year. It's funny because, again, with the rain being such an issue, it felt like I didn't really do all that much. But now that I've actually got the list in front of me, like what I did, it's that I actually did go to the track a good amount of times. Again, it just felt so rushed. I mean, going to Loudoun every year, we were there for 4 days from Friday to Monday. Of course, the rain reared its ugly head and got me drunk on Sunday. So I don't really remember much of that. So I guess it was a 3-day weekend for me. But our good buddy Chris Davis, friend of the program, he came up with us sort of very last minute and ended up camping for a couple days in the floor of the RV with us and we and my bandmates. And we just had us a time, you know. If you've never camped at a racetrack before, I can't recommend it enough. Obviously, like, not everyone is blessed enough to know somebody with an RV. But if you do have, like, your meemaw's RV or your cousin knows somebody or whatever, or you happen to be dating somebody whose family owns one, it was our case, take advantage of that shit. It's very cheap at Loudoun. I think most of the SMI tracks are also pretty affordable for RV spots. Maybe not Daytona and all that, but, like, and you're not in the center of the track by any means either. You're just on the grounds. And I think our campsite was like $160 for like 8 days in total, which split between five people it's nothing. It's absolutely nothing. But yeah, it's a different experience when you don't have to worry about being anywhere. And that's another thing that made Eldora special, is that we were camping out on the grounds. You just wake up and you make breakfast and crack a beer or whatever, and you're just there to enjoy the company of your friends and then and the racing as well. So, and Loudoun always puts on a great show. Again, that's probably the biggest weekend of the year for the modified community up here. There's always a wonderful race on Saturday. It's the Daytona 500 for modifieds, essentially, is what everyone says, and I can't find a more apt description. That race actually got delayed by rain too, but by the grace of God, they actually got that fucker in. Usually when the rain comes, the modifieds just get shafted. But this time they actually put the effort in, and we saw a hell of a finish with Justin Bodzignor getting a win. We saw an AC/DC cover band. We got to see Chase Briscoe ripping a 360 sprint in the worst dirt track I've ever seen in my life. It's a fucking blast, man. It was a blast. And I got to say, we got to see a cup race at its appropriate time of noon on Monday. That was killer. I got shit-faced at Bass Pro Shops. Like, what else do you need, folks? It was a great weekend, you know? And again, it's with a fucking just solid crew of dudes. Again, like my band, Ben and Nick in These Wild Plains, they always love, they're not even huge race fans, but they just love to go up and be a part of the experience. And we go every single year. Like I said, I don't even know if I call them casual fans, or that's probably the most you could call them. But it's always like, when's Loudoun? We're going, like, you know, when do we need to make plans by? When do you need money by? Blah, blah, blah. Like, let's get it set up. And again, like, the at racetrack camping experience, it's just so much fun. Just being around that many like-minded people is always nice. And it's nice in a world that's so divided, where you can be in a place where everyone's generally in a good mood. So,
you mentioning Briscoe in a sprint car just reminded me of one other news bit that we missed. Alex Bowman announced he is done sprint car racing until his Cup career is over.
Oh, Rick Hendrick announced that he was done.
I missed that announcement.
I think it was either yesterday or today, but it was pretty quiet. You know, I don't think anybody wasn't expecting that after all the races he's missed, you know?
Yeah. And again, he's got Kerry Madsen in the car often, and there's Hunter Schoenberg's been in there. There's been a few guys who've driven the 55. So I feel like his sprint car team will be around, and I would expect them to go with the Outlaws, but maybe not. I don't know. That's one of the big team announcements that has not been made yet, is where the Alex Bowman's car is going to go. But yeah, I'm not surprised to hear that at all. You know, breaking your back, and especially when, no offense to Alex, you're not that great in a 410. You know, maybe if you're putting up numbers like Larson or somebody else. But when it's definitely something that is not aiding your racing, then, you know, I get it. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, True Love, you had a lot of different experiences compared to the rest of us. So what's your number two?
Well, actually, I would say North Wilkesboro was my number two. I'll save my best for last, but I guess if I had to pick a number three.
Okay, so North Wilkesboro was two. Okay, so what's three then?
Two.
Yes. Okay.
I think. Yeah, I think three would. Just work with me here, Brian.
Yeah, we got it.
Yeah, three would probably be seeing Blaney win the Coke 600 and breaking that winless streak, because I am a pretty big Blaney fan, and like that was such an emotional win for him.
And despite you wearing right boots there. And cotton to a fucking rain race.
I was pretty drunk by the time he won, because there was rain delays that day too, but it was the day before when I got soaked.
But yeah,
I was standing right there when he ran out into the crowd, so that whole experience was just cool.
Yeah.
And then there was an Xfinity race after that, but
that's right.
I don't really remember.
Who's to say?
Yeah,
I don't even think I remember watching that one, so beats me.
But going to the Coke 600 the last couple of years has been fun, because it's such a good race in this new car. So
yeah,
so, cool. Yeah, no, it makes sense. It's been years since I went to a 600. I wouldn't mind going back. I mean, especially since they're not going to do an oval race in the fall just yet. So
yeah,
it's a big commitment, and it's real hot, but it's also a good race.
Well,
so.
I'll tell you, if you guys want to sort of put a little pin in the calendar for that one, there is a good chance I will be in North Carolina for the 600 this year.
Oh, you're not going to go see Larson run the Indy 500?
I don't know yet. I got a lot of like tentative plans out there, and a lot of them kind of are centering around whether or not I'm playing shows around that time. I can't say much about it just yet, but I would love to do that. Obviously, Indy's on my bucket list. It's at the very tip top, but you know, there's some other things that might supersede that this year. And one of those plans would involve me being in Charlotte. And of course, I love Charlotte. We'll probably talk about that in a second here. It's the center of the racing world, and we always end up there. So yeah, I'd love to go see the 600.
Well, I'll put that on a maybe.
Good Applebee's. Yeah, that's right. There's a Dave and Buster's as well.
I'll put that on a maybe, just because I was considering going to Pennsboro that weekend, but we'll see.
Oh, shit, that's right.
Yeah. But Pennsboro, there'll be a few races there that year, hopefully.
Yeah.
So we could go to another one. I'll go, let's see. My number two is going to be my trip to
Pennsboro. That.
Learnersville, excuse me. I mean, so this year was my first experience with any sort of sprint car races. I saw the 410s both on dirt and asphalt a few different times. But I think the Learnersville trip was, you know, special for a few different reasons. One, obviously, was the Dale Jr. moment, where I finally got to give him that shirt. Two, I finally got to meet my buddy Bobby, who I've been friends with for years now. We've just never actually linked up in real life, so getting experience that with him was fun. And also just the race itself was really, really good. You know, Larson winning in Attica was cool. I enjoyed my Attica experience, and I definitely can't wait to go back. But as far as the actual race itself, you know, the high limit race was just so much more fun, so much more action-packed. And yeah, Learnersville is a really cool track,
Pennsboro.
And hopefully Pennsboro, whatever. Fuck, these long-ass track names get me all confused.
Three syllables?
Yeah.
See, you're becoming a dirt fan.
Well, listen, not so much.
Three syllables get hard after all the dust you breathe in, so.
Yeah. I'll expand on that a little bit, but I mean, this year was a big dirt and short track year in general for me. You know, going to my first sprint car races, late models. You and Eldora is on my list for next year, 100%. To do that.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I definitely plan on going to more sprint car races this year. I mean, now with the two different series kind of running all over the Midwest, I'll have plenty of opportunities. You know, there's now a few tracks within a couple hours, so definitely plan on going to more of those races next year.
Ohio's getting a little bit screwed by the high limit World of Outlaws thing, since High Limit is not taking on Ohio Sprint Week, but there is another group that is taking care of it, and it should help some of the local guys out. And again, generally speaking, though, the Midwest is getting blessed with a lot of extra races they didn't have before because of all this. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a high limit race, Outlaws race, I mean, I got to drive at least an hour to get to any of them. So,
yeah,
it is what it is. Like, they're both within driving distance. So,
exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, let's one more, Rob, one more experience to wrap up your 2023.
Well, I can't not mention going to the World Finals a few weeks ago. That is definitely gonna be number three, but I do want to give a quick little point five to a nice experience I had going to Monadnock for the first time this year. Again, kind of a last minute sort of, you know, let's see if the rain holds off kind of situation. I've never been to this track before. It's up in New Hampshire. I did talk about it on the show, I believe. But again, kind of a last minute hop in the car and just let's get there in time for hot laps kind of thing. And if you've never gone to a racetrack by yourself, and this is definitely the highlight of me going to the racetrack by myself here, because it's almost two different experiences, right? When you have the big group of friends and you're doing your thing versus the solo experience where you, it's a different pacing and a way to take in the event. And just the drive up to Monadnock is absolutely breathtaking. It's beautiful New England mountains. A little two-lane road pretty much the whole way from my house to there. And a just sick little bull ring right across the New Hampshire border. And that was a really fun time. Again, I've gone twice this year. And both times I just ended up making friends with random people in the parking lot. So ended up not being so much of a solo experience after all. But, yeah, if you I've said this on the show before. If you ever have a chance to go to a race by yourself, or you don't have somebody going along with you, you feel weird, just go, just do it, experience it.
Meet someone there.
You'll meet someone there, and even if you don't, it's pretty cool to go to the track by yourself and experience it on your own. You can kind of pace things a little differently, but yeah, so that's my 3.5, I guess. But yeah, definitely going to the World Finals. Of course, that wasn't that long ago that Jay Pennell was on here. And, of course, Kyle, another guest here. Basically, half the people who were guests on the podcast were at this place. And it was just a blast, you know. That's a fun event to go to. And, again, it's pretty much the last major event of the year where you're going to see especially that many cars and that many, like, high-level talents showing up. So I can't recommend that one enough either. And again, you can camp at that one too, but it gets a little cold. But yeah, again, another weekend of just so much shit happened that I can't even begin to unpack it all still. But that was a nice time, and it was, again, as always, just a really nice weekend with some good buddies. So
yeah.
Now this makes feels sense. Like a dumb question, but will that be affected next year by this split?
No. Okay. No, it's always going to happen at Charlotte. I mean, I'd be shocked if the World of Outlaws lost the World Finals to High Limit.
Yeah.
But, again, like, it being one of the last events of the year, like, there are people who don't run the Outlaws full-time that are there anyway. There's a huge car count for both the late models and even the dirt modifieds, the big blocks up there. They have a bunch of guys who don't run in the Super Dirt Series that show up for it because it's just such a big event and there's so much money on the line. So no, that event should be pretty much exactly as it was, unless the Outlaws pull some crazy shit where they start barring competitors from showing up. I don't foresee that being any different, at least in the near future. So,
well, that's good.
Yeah, and even then, it's fun. Charlotte rules, man. Just go to the Thirsty Beaver when you're done.
There's so much shit to do there.
Yeah, it's good.
All right, Ashley, so you're big at number one here. Now, fuck the numbers confusion. What was your top experience?
Number one.
Number one. My number one was the weekend camping at the Bristol Night Race.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The foam party.
That makes sense.
The Andy Newsom foam party.
The Andy Newsom foam party.
The plate of barbecued meat in the sun.
Yes, sun barbecue. Yeah. Let God cook that shit.
Yeah, that was my first time, like, camping multiple nights at a racetrack. And, like,
really?
It couldn't have been with, like, I've camped one night at Talladega before, but this was
the whole experience, yeah.
Multiple,
you were there for, like,
and,
3 or 4 days, right?
Yeah, we got there Thursday, left Sunday, so.
Man. It's the way to do it, I'm telling you.
Yeah. And it could have been with, like, a better group, like Andy Newsom and my buddy Josh Tate, and I got to take my good friend Clayton to his first Bristol race.
Nice.
And,
Yeah. Shout out to Andy Newsom for my Charlotte experience as well. He was taking photos. I didn't get to hang out with him too much, but even stone sober, because he was working, he's literally on the clock. No better guy to hang out with. Yeah. Knows everybody. I watched him talking to some younger kids who were there in the SRI pavilion with me. He knows from racing, like, you know, small block, whatever the fuck it is, you know, the steel block modifieds, all that shit, or late models, and like dirt bike kid, just whoever the fuck. He knows everybody.
Yeah.
Because he's such a nice guy. And he just makes you feel good. So I'm glad you got to experience that with him. That's awesome.
Yeah. I got to go to a couple races with him this year, but hopefully next year there'll be a few more. But he stays so busy throughout the year. But
yeah,
we also have to have him on as a guest next year.
Someone's got to be taking the photos at Natural Bridge.
Yeah.
If not Andy, then who?
Yeah. But yeah, I had a hot pass for that weekend, and Dale Jr. ran the Xfinity race, and like getting to be up close for that, like,
oh, he caught on fire.
Yeah, he caught on fire. Him leading laps at Bristol, like the crowd was insane for that.
You got to hang out with the Monster Girls.
Yeah. The Monster Girls blocking my view of precious moments with Dale Jr.'s family. I will never forgive her. Yeah.
I and forgot the cup about race, that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Hamlin won. That was whatever, but. Also, being a Bubba fan, getting to be down on pit road when he made it to the round of 12 and, like, everyone counted him out. Like, watching the emotions that he went through up close, that was cool, too. So,
yeah.
For, like, a fan, I got to, you know, fangirl out a lot that weekend.
Yeah.
And have a great time with my friends. So, that was my favorite experience from the year.
Hell, yeah.
Yep. And if I had to add a 0.5 like Rob did, it would be meeting Linda Vaughn, which isn't a race experience, but still one of the coolest things.
That's right, yeah.
In my year.
That's fucking awesome.
It counts. It counts.
It counts, yeah.
Well, mine, I think it probably isn't a surprise. It's going to be
Ross Chastain winning, watching it on home of television. You know?
Yeah, yeah, he actually won. He actually won Phoenix. No, it's going to be my... the big trip to New York, driving the big block modified at the Kenny Wallace experience.
Yeah.
Seeing Kenny Tremont run a few more times, hanging out with him at his house. Like, there's really couldn't ask for a whole lot more other than
pretty
what
hard
that
to,
fucking rain.
Pretty hard to top, you know? That. Yeah. That's a pretty wild fucking weekend, man.
Yeah, you know, a lot of kind of elements of what both Rob and Ashley said about different weekends they loved. I mean, it was getting behind the wheel of a car is one of those things I never necessarily thought I'd get to do. And, you know, it only half counts because it's not a real race car. You know, at the very least, I got to go on my favorite track of all time. And yeah, I think overall in general, like I mentioned, this was a big year for short track racing for me. And in part, I guess Kenny retiring helped reinvigorate that a little bit. And, you know, I've already got a bunch of race trips planned for next year.
You going to the Valley at all next year?
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I always come home at least once or twice during the year. So, yeah. You know, probably not necessarily for any particular race. But, you know, anytime I'm home, I try to make it out there. So
it is. I realize it's under 2 hours from my house. So it's criminal that I don't go more often. So you just got to let me know because I have to go next year. I have to.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's that track has not changed hardly at all in over 30 years of going there. The food still tastes the same. It's still cheap as hell. It's still a great time.
Same bat of nacho cheese they've been working on since the
80s. No. They have some of the best hand-cut French fries I've ever had in my life.
Damn.
And fried dough, pizza. You know, meatball subs, everything. It's all fucking great. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, those are the top experiences, and let's talk about what we're looking forward to next year after we talk about the DARF of the week and the video of the week. And I guess technically this would be the DARF of the year segment. And Rob, you've got all sorts of nominations here.
Oh, definitely, yeah. But real quick before we move on to that, we did put a little questionnaire out on Instagram about what people's favorite racing moments of the year. And these are a little bit more about actual, like, happenings and not so much personal experiences. I do want to shout a couple of these out. I think the biggest NASCAR Pulp, which is an account we all follow, which is pretty cool that whoever that is follows us. They were saying that the Pocono crowd reaction when Denny Hamlin got out of the car and he got booed like a motherfucker. He referred to it as Martinsville 2017, but with one less corner. That's very apt and completely appropriate. So I also love that very much. And then our buddy Sparse Existence on Instagram also responded saying that being in the pits at the Bristol Night Race was also his number one experience of the year at the racetrack. I thought those two were pretty cool. Is that your buddy, Trulo?
I don't know that guy.
You don't know that guy, but he was down there with you. So
we should have hung out next time.
But yeah, again, I just got to say this real quick, too. It's been really fun to communicate and get to know some of the people who are listening. Again, we don't have thousands of listeners. We're not the Dale Jr. Download or fucking anything like that. Not anywhere close, believe me. But it is really cool to have gotten to know a few of you out there. And for those that do interact with the show a lot, it means a lot. It's cool because I know that a big motivation for me wanting to do this show, and I've said this before, but it's to make connections with people that are like-minded, and also to give a space for people who might not feel like they have friends who are into this, or you know, they kind of feel alone in their fandom, to know that there are some other weirdos out there that are also into this and you can link up with them. So and the fact that has happened, and again, I think a lot of these folks actually do have a lot of friends and all that, so that's not necessarily that category. But also, but like, I had a point five here to invite new people in who might not watch racing, you know, now that they have somebody they can listen to where it doesn't feel so off-putting or hard to get into. And, you know, I wanted that a few years ago when I got really, really heavy back into this stuff, especially with the short track stuff. And, you know, part and parcel because of this show and you guys in particular of introducing me to your friends, I've been able to make these connections and have these experiences. And I hope that, that this is sort of reciprocated to you, the listener out there, through what we're doing. And, it's been cool to interact with everybody. So thank you for that. It really does mean a lot to me. And I don't mean to speak for everybody, but I'm sure it means a lot to Brian and Trulove, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, the connections thing is definitely why I wanted to do it as well. I mean, we've talked about this. Like, I didn't really have many racing friends growing up. I can count on one hand how many friends that I had that were even vaguely interested in going to the racetrack. One of them, still to this day, goes to races every week. But it really wasn't until I got back into racing as an adult that I started to meet people. And again, that's a lot in part due to the internet. I mean, racing is a weird, I shouldn't say it's a weird thing, but it's kind of a fringe thing. It's not like every other sport or form of media where you can meet people every single day that you're connect with on more than just a fandom level. And doing this show and just kind of being in this sort of little bubble that we've created has really helped that. So definitely thankful for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I definitely grew up not having any NASCAR friends either. And then as an adult, kind of feeling like, I don't know, like a NASCAR black sheep fan. Like,
Outcast.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you don't really fit in with stereotypical NASCAR fans. But being able to find so many through like social media that are like myself and you guys and listeners.
Yeah, social media sucks for a lot of reasons, but this is one of the reasons why I'm glad this is in our world, because it allows all of us to get together and connect. And it's fucking awesome, man. I love it.
Yeah. But now let's talk about dumbasses.
Oh, shit on them. Now we brought you up. Fuck you. So Dart for the Week has not been a segment every single week of the show, but it's been a pretty constant thread here. There's a lot of shitting on people on here that deserve it. And, you know, like, I don't like to spend a lot of time on Twitter, Facebook, kind of searching for these things. And, you know, I kind of like to let them come to me a little bit. And there's been some dry weeks. And usually if you don't hear me bring it up, it's because I just didn't see anything that really, you know, set my spidey sense off or whatever. But for whatever reason, whether it's just the fact that it's the off season, and that's in air quotes here, because the short track world is still happening, you know, it's just a little more focused. Or what? I don't even know. Maybe everyone's just the weather is fucking with them. It's like seasonal depression or something. But the floodgates just fucking opened this week, And I have several DARFs of the week before we get to our big DARF of the week for the year here. And before I get into these, do you guys have anyone that you'd like to shout out? Any favorites or anybody you saw this week that you want to shine a light on?
Not from this week.
Well, Brett Griffin is back to saying stupid shit about politics on Twitter.
Yeah,
so
I feel like
that's
he's
all
kind
I
of
got
overall,
to say.
Overall DARF of the year for me.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I know this wasn't on your list that you sent out to the group chat earlier, but earlier this year we did have a nominee for DARF of the Year. The guy that made the comments about the Chicago grandstands and the...
Oh, the NRF guy?
Potential shooter, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was going to mention him.
I'll let you. I'll save that for you, though.
But, yeah, like I said, lots of amazing material that came up this week. And I'm going to do my best to get through this without crying. The first one comes from, actually, we just mentioned Sparse Existence. One of our listeners out there actually tagged us, and we really do love it when you do this. You see something, say something. You know, this is how we, this helps me. There was a post, I believe it was on the Legacy Motor Club or whatever the fuck they're called.
Yeah.
Motor Group. Okay, it sounds like a dealership. Page of Jimmy Johnson talking to Eric Jones or somebody like that. And he's
John Hunter.
That's right, John Hunter Nemechek. And he's wearing a polo, I think, and like some, you know, not like Christopher Bell khakis, but they're like a little more casual, you know. He just looks like a guy, and he's got like sort of like the 5 o'clock shadow going on. And again, thank you for Sparse Existence for tagging both them and us. But Taryn and Woody was the name of the account, and they said, Jimmy must have had to drag his ass off the couch. My goodness, can't you put on something that looks like you're going to work? Which I didn't realize, like, khakis and a polo wasn't fucking work attire. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. I guess I did get laid off this year, so maybe I don't know what it takes to keep a job, but, you know, it is what it is.
Now, see, originally, I guess I skimmed that, and I didn't see that she was calling out Jimmy, and I thought she was talking about John Hunter showing up in his workout gear, because he had on some, like, booty shorts in that picture.
Oh, maybe that's who she was talking. Either way. Either way. I took it as Jimmy Johnson looking a little bit like shit, but there's a couple other people.
Well, he had a rough year.
Yeah, he really did. Yes. I'm probably be wearing my casual khakis to the office as well.
Yeah.
God, who else here? There's a list of them I'm bringing up here. A wonderful contribution from the NASCAR shitposting group. Somebody posted a Photoshop of Chase Elliott with Jeffrey Epstein, which was great. And this caused a guy named DJ Plum Crazy Henry Cam. Carrie Ham. I am dyslexic as fuck today. Wow. DJ Plum Crazy Carrie Ham. I don't know what.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah. And they are American, judging by their profile photo that has a silhouette of an American flag around it, saying, I reported you to Chase Elliott Race Team and Hendrix Motorsport Racing. Gotta love that shit. The S always cracks me up. I sent them both a screenshot of your BS, and I'm sure you can expect a certified letter from their attorneys. You cannot do stuff like that. I hope you learn a lesson, in all caps, to which this guy responds, hell yeah, that's awesome.
So, shout out
to James Shingleton from the NASCAR Ship Post Group for putting that piece of joy together for me.
None of us really consider ourselves part of the stereotypical NASCAR fandom group, but again, the nice thing about the internet is we can fuck with those people.
Yeah, it's great.
And I don't do it so much myself, but I love seeing it. It is hilarious.
It is wonderful.
And,
I got one more honorable mention for the week. Of course, the Tulsa shootout is happening starting on the 27th, so next week, right after Christmas, we'll have something to look forward to. And they announced NOS Energy Drink to be one of the major sponsors of the event. There's a guy named Dom McKinney in the Facebook post for this announcement of them hanging the banner in the Expo Center saying, "Nah, we drink beer, the original health drink, LOL." Which it's not so much of a DARF thing as I've never heard anyone refer to NOS Energy as a health drink. And I can tell you, after having three or four of them at the World Finals, it is not good for your body. Kidneys shut down. Yeah, just wonderful submissions, and that's not even the best one of the week here. And honestly, like I said, I have my DARF of the year already picked out and ready to go. And I guess I'll start with them. The NRF guy definitely is kind of tied into this. It's these sort of NASCAR pundits. It's like a general award, you know. It's like saying, like, the Marines are Time Magazine's fucking person of the year or whatever. Speaking of group. But I'm lumping the NRF Productions guy and his thing about people getting shot in Chicago, like JFK, and the Ultimate 23 Dragon chick, who's, of course, if you don't know who that is, it's Johnny Benson's number one fan, and also was trying to bribe Raja Karuth to wreck Austin Hill at Phoenix for some fucking reason for racist things that Raja did, which is, that's something.
Zero sense.
Yeah, I won't even bother diving into that because... a late entrant has has
this
emerged.
This made me cry earlier when I saw it. I was laughing so hard.
So my, I can't, I just, right at the 11th hour, you know, you think you know what's going on, and then the universe just gives you the true direction. And my dart for the year is a man named Michael Brooks. And, of course, we already talked about it. The Gateway Dirt Nationals happened in St. Louis over the weekend. This guy goes on Facebook. He posts a photo of some of the drivers, the late model guys like Nick Hoffman and Tyler Erb, a couple other guys, lined up along the top of the track. And if you've ever been to a dirt track, they're all kind of bowls, right? Mm-hmm. So they build this thing in an arena, and at the top of the cushion or whatever, it's a little hill of dirt. And so these guys are all standing up at the top, and there's some officials clearly behind him that are standing on the floor of the arena. And this guy, he says, I'm just going to read it. Well, I have protested the NFL since Colin Kaepernick affair. Now I guess I'll protest the dome when drivers get out of their car for the national anthem, but the race officials are sitting on their ass. Pisses me off. And they're very clearly standing, just not on top of the fucking cushion. So this guy is my dart for the year. There's nothing dumber I've seen. It's like so dumb that I don't even know if this fucking guy was kidding or not. Was he kidding? I don't know. Who cares? So. I don't think he was either.
It was Facebook. I don't think he was kidding.
But yeah, that guy, Michael Brooks, you're my dart of the year here on the Meet Me at Applebee's podcast. You actually owe Applebee's a $50 gift card for your contribution this year. But thank you for the joy. I hope you stand for that fucking flag at the tallest point of every racetrack you ever go to.
Now, did you get to see the actual comments on that photo? Because I would love to see those.
I got to go back and I didn't. I just, I read a few of them. I just didn't take any screenshots because they're standing, dude, is pretty much what they're. Have you been to a racetrack before? That sort of thing. But yeah, find the top of the flag stand next time you go. Climb up there, you know, shimmy up the flagpole right below Org Glory. Make sure you're right up there, you know, taller than anybody. You know, is that the higher the hair, closer to God, some Pentecostal shit like that? Yeah,
you that's can rent a cherry picker.
Exactly, yeah, and show the troops how much you care. So, but yeah,
we'll share this picture in the post so that you guys can.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking remarkable. And like I said, it's been a year of a lot of... We've seen some dumb shit, folks. And again, thank you, fans, for your submissions. Kyle Armstrong probably racked up the most submissions that we actually put on the show.
He stays on top of it.
He does. He is sort of our big Darf hunter out there. Maybe I'll print him up a T-shirt that says that on it. Also, I do have to give a shout out to both the NRF Productions guy and Ultimate 23 Dragon. They both made it on the show twice apiece, so they get our quantity over quality award, I guess. But yeah, this guy takes the cake. So congratulations, sir. That is the dumbest shit I've seen on the internet this year. In a year where Bubba Wallace, in fact, raced a race car in NASCAR, so it's pretty hard to beat some of those fuckers. Jesus fuck.
Well, as it is, again, this is the end of the year, end of the racing season, and that also means the holidays are right around the corner. Obviously, Christmas is going to be... Christmas will have already happened. Wait, no. I'm an idiot. Christmas will be happening in a couple days. Hanukkah's happening. And
Rob's got his Hanukkah shirt on.
Yep, it's true.
He has his
Hanukkah shirt.
Hanukkah sprint car shirt. But obviously, gift giving is a big part of this. And the video of the week this week, it wasn't really one that has too much to talk about, but NASCAR Man History made a nice little slideshow of different things that were offered in the catalogs that we all lived through in our childhood. Now, I don't think we have any listeners that are too young to have been around before catalog shopping existed, but JCPenney, Sears, Montgomery Wards, all that shit. This is how people bought toys and presents, you know, when we were all little ones.
For the real old
60s.
Motherfuckers out there, the service merchandise catalog.
Oh, yeah, we had a service merchandise store in Albany up until probably the early 2000s.
Yeah, you remember that shit? You'd, like, walk around with your mom, and they'd have a clipboard, and they'd, like, write down the fucking serial numbers of the shit they wanted to go buy, and they'd go up to the counter, and then it would show up in, like, a month. Which is what shopping will be pretty soon, so.
Yeah.
Service merchandise is ahead of the game.
But this little video, I guess I wanted to highlight both a couple things that I got throughout the years and then also just some interesting stuff. And obviously you guys, too, can – I don't know if any of you guys got any of the things that we were shown in these videos. But
I was actually surprised at some of the omissions that I thought would have made the video. And again, like, this is one of those things – we talked about the QVC thing earlier in the year, NASCAR having a big presence on the shopping network shows and all that. They are also very heavily featured in the sports sections and toy sections of these catalogs. And like I said, I was a little surprised to see certain things weren't featured, but let's go ahead and talk about the ones that were, I guess.
So I was a little surprised to see a NASCAR toy in a 1959 catalog. Obviously, that was way before any of our time. But, I mean, NASCAR at that point had only been around for about a decade. In saying that, I know, you know, racing was big in the Northeast. I know my dad probably had some of these toys. I know he remember watching, going to races as a kid and seeing highlights on TV and stuff. But, that was a little surprising. There was some sports car stuff with, like, Parnelli Jones and A.J. Foyt throughout the 60s and 70s, which was not really much of a shock to see. NASCAR stuff really started to pick up in the 70s. There was actually a bunch of different puzzles that came out in 1973, and I actually have the Buddy Baker one in my living room as we speak. I haven't actually done it yet, but I do have that. There were a couple different examples of RC cars with both alcohol and tobacco sponsors on them, one being a 1982 Harry Gant Skull car and the other being an 87 IROC RC, which, I mean, these were both before my time. I didn't really start getting NASCAR toys till after Days of Thunder came out, but at that point, those sponsors were not allowed on kids' toys, so... it was a window that I just missed, and I think we're all about the same age.
I definitely had like Matchbox cars and diecasts when I was very, very young, but none of them had tobacco or alcohol sponsors on them, probably because my parents were the ones buying them, and they didn't want that in the house, so I couldn't honestly tell you if that was the case. But
my parents wouldn't have given a shit. Like, they definitely let me go to middle school with Bud Ice t-shirts and stuff, so sick, like, man. They would not have cared at all about having some toy cars with that stuff on there.
Here's a little insight of my parents here. My mom had to call me the other day to ask me, like, how much brandy she should buy to make biscuititos, which are cookies, and where to find the brandy. She's like, you know, right? And I'm like, well, I don't know how I feel about that. So I had to guide her through the liquor store at Walmart to find brandy on the phone. Yeah, it was adorable. So, yeah, that's where I'm coming from. But probably the closest thing I had back in those days was I think this might be the oldest one I had. It was Darrell Waltrip's, like, when did he run the Mountain Dew car? 82?
85? No. No, he was in the Bud car in 85. Yeah, I guess it was 82, 83, Diehard era.
So I had one of those, and it was definitely, I probably had lead in it, so. I also had a Gordon Johncock STP Indy car from 81, I believe. I think it was before he won the 500, which was 82. But I don't know. Yeah, anyway.
That's just before my time. I know me and Ashley are about the same age, so I
mean, it was
never
before
had...
my time, too. I just had them. I don't know where I fucking got them from. Like, they were just in my life. Nah.
So. 1988, they listed a Sears NASCAR modified buggy, like dune buggy, which
dude,
this was this. So here's, there's no NASCAR branding on this thing at all. I know why he included it, because it is a NASCAR modified body, but again, there's nothing to do with NASCAR other than the actual plastic body on this like RC chassis.
Yeah, it's very clearly a little truck.
Yeah. So that was a bit of a stretch, but still thought it was funny to be included. Now, 1990, these are my the two things on the – I should say two things,
that's
one
the,
thing really on my
list.
That's
the zone right there, yeah.
This was the one thing on this list that I was incredibly jealous that I didn't have, and that was the Days of Thunder and Davey Allison go-karts. I know in later years, I remember seeing like Michael Waltrip and a couple other drivers had them in like the JCPenney or Sears catalog, but these two from 1990, I mean, fuck, I would love to have them now just to hang in my garage. But
seriously, yeah. The Davey one was particularly cool with the gold 28. Yeah.
I have seen that one pop up from time to time on eBay, but I've not seen the Superflow cold trickle car at all. Next up, we get into the die-cast sets, which Sears made these every single year, starting in 92 up until probably the end of Racing Champions. But I got these pretty much every year. I got one of these sets. Both NASCAR was the only one that went throughout multiple years, but when Racing Champions first started, not only did they make stock cars, but they had a line of dragsters, funny cars. They did a couple Indy car runs. They even had some monster trucks and Boulder Outlaws too. Like, I had the monster trucks, I had the drag cars, and I had all the NASCAR sets, and I got those every single year. That was like just a constant. Like, one of my aunts always got them for me.
Circled those fuckers in the catalog every year. I got diecast. Don't get me wrong. My parents definitely like filled the display case I'm standing next to with diecast. But I never that particular set. I think it was the commitment of buying like 20 of them, and my mom was just like, "No, fuck off. Yeah. Absolutely not."
Let's see. Next up, some more common stuff that I even have in my house right now. NASCAR 90s bedspreads. I 100% had these as a kid, and right now my dog is sleeping on the comforter as we speak.
The NASCAR one, not the driver specific one, right?
The NASCAR, the plain ass NASCAR one.
That's cool.
NASCAR phones. I sell these every so often. I think I have a couple of them in stock right now in my store. If for some reason you want a touch tone phone from 1993,
Speedway screens, TSJ@etsy.com.
Yeah, they're there. And then Nutmeg clothing, which Nutmeg was just a general sports licensing company that, you know, they did every major sport brand, every single team sport they had clothing produced of, and they were in JCPenney, and they were the first like major retailer that wasn't Walmart or like a shittier department store that I remember seeing NASCAR stuff in, and that line started in 93 and eventually morphed into, I think Nutmeg was absorbed by Chase after Chase also absorbed Sports Image, and that's the company that would make that stuff that would end up in the department store catalogs later on, that ended up driver suit jackets and stuff like that, which was later covered. Now, who else got the NASCAR Barbie for Christmas? Because I feel I got it. I know I got it. I'm sure it was a joke that all sorts of fucking NASCAR fanboys, their moms, oh, we got you the NASCAR Barbie. Like, that's what happened to me.
No.
Like, oh, thanks. Yeah, great. Throw this in the fucking
closet.
That's
the only thing in this video that I ever got was that NASCAR Barbie 50th anniversary. And I wasn't even allowed to play with it. I was told I had to leave it in the box because it would be a collector's item one day.
Yep. Oh, and there
and
are
I
seven.
I still have it, and it's still in the box, and it's not worth shit. So
there is one at literally every single flea market in the entire country. You will find at least one of them.
Yeah.
Like, without a doubt.
I'm pretty sure my parents were just doing everything they could to keep me from being gay, which is not how it works. But they wouldn't have even imagined buying me a Barbie. But the same advice was definitely held, was like, keep the nice ones in the box. Don't play with that shit.
And the only other notes I had towards the end of this catalog, which I did a inflation calculator for these $160 in 2005 jackets. That's like $255 now, which seems like a crazy amount of money for those jackets. I never have bought one new. I mean, obviously I buy them on the resale market all the time.
Well, food was also like, you go to the grocery store and spend like, what, $8?
But $160 just seems like a crazy amount.
It does feel a lot.
And then I was shocked to see a 1/6 scale Bobby Hamilton RC truck. Like, that just seems like a weird driver, a weird size truck to have been sold. It just, that didn't make any sense. But at that point in 2005 or 6 or whatever the fuck year, I would have already passed my NASCAR gift phase. I was on to just like bike stuff and clothes at that point.
Yeah. Talking to girls, listening to the Dead Kennedys, that kind of shit.
Well, fuck. Yeah, 2006, I was already in college, so yeah. So those are the holiday notes, and two things. Any notes on the video itself, and then we'll talk about our favorite NASCAR gifts.
I said, I there's a few things I thought would be included, and I guess this sort of covers
both. Yeah,
that's
what I wanted to ask, yeah.
So there was this Micro Machines Martinsville, like, it wasn't Martinsville. It wasn't licensed as Martinsville, but it was very, very a small little paperclip.
Yeah, it was a track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I remember getting that out of the catalog, or at least circling it in the catalog, and it showed up on Christmas. And that was a great thing. So thanks, Mom. The other one that I was surprised wasn't included, and I've mentioned this on the show before. Maybe it was even the first episode. I can't remember. But in 1996, Micro Machines also made and this is sort of the end of my toy period, because I was like 12, 13, you know, getting into middle school. Again, trying to talk to girls listening to Dead Kennedys at that point. But still, love fucking toys. So it was Micro Machines for the entire grid of the 1996 Indy 500.
Yeah, you've mentioned that. Yeah, yeah. I've looked for that.
It was a catalog exclusive. I don't know if that made it into stores at all. But I did circle that one, and I did receive it, and I lost it, which I'm pissed about. But it is what it is. But I was kind of shocked to see that those weren't included. I guess, like, the diecast collections were the other thing that I don't remember there being, like, 100 of them in some of these packages.
It was usually, like, a dozen. I feel like I remember getting one that was either 18 or 24. Yeah. But yeah, there might have been one or two there that were a lot of cars, and I don't remember any. Yeah.
And you can still find these things, like the Brimfield Fair antique shows, or sometimes antique stores. Like, they do pop up in their original packaging, and again, like, the pricing is all over the fucking place because people don't know what they're worth.
Well, it's racing champions, so there's a fraction of racing champions diecasts that are worth anything more than like $3.
One thing I did notice, though, was that the JD McDuffie car was included in one of those sets. I think it was
92, and yeah, that would have been because he died in 91, so it would have come out from the 92 season. So
yeah, but that one did cause me to pause and like, did I get one of those for Christmas? But no, I think I bought that with my allowance. On sale at KB or some shit like that.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, JD.
Well, yeah, true love. You said you didn't really get any NASCAR gifts going up, huh? No toys or anything like that.
No. Every Christmas when these catalogs came out, it was like the highlight. Like, I looked forward to these catalogs coming out. I would pore over them for you know, weeks and weeks, and circle every single thing that I wanted in there. Yep. But my family was dirt poor. Like, we had a roof overhead, food on the table, but we weren't getting officially licensed NASCAR things.
Like, yeah, the Bill Elliott the $129 Bill Elliott statuette.
Yeah, well, I lived in a trailer till I was like 15, but like, the NASCAR Barbie was the only thing, and I wasn't even allowed to play with it. Because all the shit in the catalogs was so expensive. And then looking back at this video, seeing the prices, I was like, oh, okay.
Makes sense,
yeah, this
right?
Shit,
still
this shit
buy
was
it.
Expensive. No wonder my parents weren't buying me this shit.
Yeah.
So I'd get, like, knockoff shit from Walmart or Big Lots.
Yeah, well, that's what my parents would do. That's what I was just about to say. Like, it's kind of the same deal. Like, it sounds like you're a little worse off than we were, but my dad didn't have any. He started to start his own business at that point as well. Yeah. So like, every dime went to that outside of like food and whatever else. But, you know, they would look at the catalog and then do their best to approximate it from the local Walmart.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, like I said, the display case standing next to me here has a lot of those things in there. I think probably one of my most prized possessions is a 124 scale Davy Allison car from 92, which I can't remember if that was my birthday or Christmas. But if the house catches on fire, that is the thing I'm grabbing. Yeah. Running down here and getting that motherfucker. Yeah.
I remember every year the thing I wanted the most was that NASCAR bedroom suit. Like, I wanted that comforter. Yes. I wanted those curtains. I wanted that wallpaper border, and I never got it. But it's funny now as an adult, like, my whole house is NASCAR decor, I guess. I'm just living out my childhood fantasy.
Oh, you got it. Yeah.
I got it.
See, listening to you guys talk about this stuff makes me feel very privileged, because, I mean, we weren't rich by any means either. I mean, we were all pretty lower to middle class. I would say with my family, we had a pretty big extended family, and we were all close. We all lived in the same town. We'd always get together for Christmas. So I got a lot of stuff, but it was spread out throughout, you know, a handful of aunts and uncles and grandparents and stuff. But I mean, I had both, my one aunt would go to races and she'd get me stuff. And then also my mom would always go, she'd always go to the Carolinas in the fall for this golfing trip with my stepdad. So, you know, she would stock up on shit to disperse it out to my aunts and uncles to give me. And it was always just like race, like shirts or like a die cast or something like that. Yeah. You know? But I mean, for a good 6-7 years, it was just, that's all I got was NASCAR stuff. But in saying that, I think the two gifts that I liked the most, there one would be the Kenny Wallace experience, but that's, we already talked enough about that. The other would actually be getting NASCAR 98 for PlayStation.
My brother got it.
Through all, you know, toys and stuff were great, and I loved all the diecast and shirts I would get, but growing up, like, I never really had good video game experience when it came to racing games. You know, I mentioned I had the Sega Genesis game, the F1 game. I didn't have a Super Nintendo or an N64 or anything. I had a regular NES system up until PlayStation 1 came out in 98, and I got that for Christmas. So
that's how I was too. Yeah.
for whatever reason, I never got that Bill Elliott NASCAR game, even though I ended up playing it at some point. I never had the Days of Thunder game. You know, I played NASCAR on PC at my buddy's house. We didn't even get a computer till 2000 because my parents refused to get one until after Y2K. That says anything about how I was raised. But
hell yeah.
Getting NASCAR 98 was like, It was my mind was blown, and I couldn't even tell you how many fucking hours I played that and how embedded into my brain Flirting with Disaster is. Like, I will never ever not be able to hear that song and not think of the startup screen and Benny Parsons and Ned Jarrett.
I would argue that is the national anthem of NASCAR racing, is Flirting with Disaster by Molly Hatchet.
For people our age, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, in 98, I got the Barbie that I couldn't play with, and my brother got the video game. So,
yeah. So my first NASCAR video game was the actual NASCAR racing from Papyrus on DOS, which is what they built iRacing off of, which is crazy to think about. Because my parents, I think the most advanced shit I had was a Game Boy until like PS2 came out or something like that. But we did have PCs in the house. My dad was like a big computer guy because he was an electrical engineer. And so I did play a lot of DOS games and shit like that, and that was another like quality. I think it was a birthday gift or something.
Did you ever play the PlayStation version of the Papyrus game?
I never did. No.
Oh, I did. It was the graphics were absolute dog shit, especially compared to the EA Sports game. But the actual driving control was a bit more sim. And also you could do wacky shit like drive your car around the track backwards 600 laps and just do all sorts of weird stuff you couldn't do in the EA Sports games. It was way more stripped down. There was no good career mode, but the actual gameplay was a little more accurate, much like the PC game.
Yeah. But yeah, I never I never got to play that one, but I'd like to. What's the standard? It's NASCAR Thunder, right? That's the big one that everyone still plays.
That's the thing, is I don't think there really is one. I mean, somebody else I think just got control of the license, but you know, the motorsports game shit, that's over with. EA was the last. I don't even. There was somebody between EA Sports and motorsports games, but
Eutechnics had it, and they made that weird Wii game, which I was very. It's the only. I fucking suck at video games, folks. My brain just can't wrap my head around it. Always wanted to be good at it. Always dog shit. But the Wii NASCAR game was it like Inside Line? I'll whoop your something ass like at that game. I'm, for whatever reason, that one makes sense. Like, I can rip Dover like a motherfucker in that game. But, yeah.
I remember that one.
I don't know. Yeah, I've never been good at video games. But I'll tell you what. Like, when my wife goes out of town for whatever reason, I will drag the PS2 out, and I will always play NASCAR 2006 Total Team Control. And I'll just rip a career mode until she gets back, and then it gets tucked under the tucked back into the hole from whence it came.
So
that's probably the last great NASCAR game, though, I think, was 2006. But
I tapped out of video games in, I think, 2003, I want to say. That's the last one I got.
The iRacing thing intrigues me, but I don't fucking have time for that.
Same.
It would suck me in a way I don't need it to, so, you know.
Same.
I wish my brain would work that way. And again, I suck at video games, so, like, what makes you think I'd be good at that? Although I did lay a pretty fierce hot lap down at the Hall of Fame once at Texas, so I led the leaderboard for most of the day. King of the fucking gift shop over here.
That.
All right, yeah. So we got to wrap this show up here. It's getting late. So what are we looking forward to in 2024? I mean, I don't think any of us have too many concrete plans, but I mean, any specific races, any just general experiences you want to go? We want to go check out, or what do we got on the schedule for next year?
I mean, I think I'm the only one that has concrete plans right now, and that's I'm going to the Chili Bowl in a few weeks, which is been on my list for a very, very long time. I've almost made it a habit. Like, I always go see my parents in January, and they lived in New Mexico for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. And there's a long-standing tradition of me getting drunk at their kitchen table, watching the Chili Bowl on my laptop. And this year, now that they moved to Arkansas, within 2 hours of Tulsa, I actually get to go. And there'll still be a little bit of me getting drunk at their kitchen table and watching it, but for at least Friday and Saturday, I'll actually be there in person. And it seems like it's going to be me and former guest Jay Pennell, as well as our good buddy Alex Hammett, who we'll probably bring on the show, honestly, to kick the season off, if this all actually works out the way it's supposed to.
If you all survive.
If we survive the Chili Bowl. But I'm sure you'll come back
home with the Chili Bowl flu, too.
So. Oh, yeah, exactly. All that exhaust from just watching midgets rip around for a few days. It'll shave 10 years off my life, but that's definitely the highlight I'm looking forward to the most. It still doesn't feel real. You know, until I'm actually standing in the Expo Center, I won't believe that it's going to happen. But if you happen to be in the Tulsa area, hit me up, because I'll be there at least Friday and Saturday, and I'm very much looking forward to that. Of course, I'm going to Loudon, as always. All Thompson and Stafford shit. You know, that's my usual shit is happening. Kind of on that. And also, the World Finals has also become sort of a perennial thing for me, and I'm trying to fit Eldora in there as well. So it's tough. There's only so many days in a year, and when you start to do cool shit, you just always want to do it every time. So we're going to see where the axe falls this year. But I'm at least going to the Chili Bowl, goddammit. It's going to happen. So
there you go.
I'm definitely looking forward to hearing about that.
Yeah. And I honestly, we got to link up this year, actually. And I know we've all kind of seen each other randomly throughout the year. Well, maybe not you and I, Brian, but Trill, did we hang out this year?
No, our last time was at, last fall.
Fuck.
When we went to the Hall of Fame.
Oh, damn. Yeah. I failed you guys.
So, yeah, it's just being true of hanging out multiple times.
That's me being a bad friend. Though I was in Ohio and you weren't there. But we got to make that happen.
That's true.
We got to make that happen next year.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I know. I mean, Eldora's on my list with you 100%. Yeah. You know, I always do Darlington Mother's Day now because, you know, my mom's down there. It makes total sense to do that. And, you know, there's Mid-Ohio trucks. There's I'm actually debating the All-Star Race. Not the All-Star Race. The Clash. because
really,
yeah, Mike and I, we have a mutual friend out there. He's actually one of the guys that came to Atlanta with us. He lives in L.A. I was looking at plane tickets, and it was only $130.
It's pretty cheap to fly to L.A. like at all times.
Yeah, but in saying that, it's the rest of the shit that has to get sorted out. So if it's you know, just because the flight's cheap doesn't mean the rest of it's going to be cheap. So we haven't really made that decision yet, and that's another race. It's not going to sell out, so I'm not too worried about it. Yeah. I don't know if I'll do Wilkesboro again this year. I would like to kind of almost wait till it's a full cup, like an actual points race. I don't know if and when they'll do that. You know, I think being there for the reopening was really important, and especially now that we've been there once and I know the layout of the area, and it's not going to be as much of a nightmare to get in and out of the track as I anticipated. That'll make the next trip there a little bit easier. We don't have to do that bus bullshit that we did last time, but that's to be determined.
Something to be said about a good shuttle, you know.
Yeah, but when you don't have to shuttle, when it adds an extra hour to your trip, you know.
I'll say this: I don't think the All Star Race is in my plans in the near future. However, the modified race there with the Cars Tour backing it up, that seems. Actually, maybe I just made that event up, but the modifieds are going there. I don't know if the Cars Tour is there with them. The Cars Tour is ending their regular season at Wilkesboro, and maybe that's what I'm mixing up with. But
they'll be there for the All-Star week, too.
Yes, yeah. But a much more active schedule, and again, the short track element of it is a little more intriguing to me than seeing cup cars there, especially the modifieds. That's a legendary spot for modified racing, so... if I do make it, it would be for that. And Wilkesboro is not that hard to get to from Charlotte. It's really, you know, it's actually a pretty easy one for, you know, there's a lot of direct flights to Charlotte. It's not hard to get from Charlotte to there, especially with all the friends we have. So maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm with you. I don't think the All-Star Race is really on my radar.
And I definitely plan on going to a lot more dirt this year, especially 410 stuff, just because, again, there's going to be so many options within a couple hours of me. So that'll be on the list for sure. And, you know, again, that Memorial Day weekend now, I'm almost debating Indy also, just because being there for a 500 in general is something I need to go to at least once. But to be there for Larson attempting it, you know, there's part of me that's curious for that, too. So,
yeah. That's also in my wish list, and it's very possible. Yeah. But yeah, I haven't. I'm trying not to like make plans and get excited about it.
It's still too early.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But what about you, True Love? What do you have confirmed so far? I know you always add races.
Yeah, I'm pretty last minute with my race plans typically because, you know,
come to Eldora.
Doesn't sell out.
Come to Eldora. Come on.
I do want to finally check off Eldora, but we'll see. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure it'll be a lot of the same races that I went to this year. I'd like to add a few, but the only one I have concrete set in plans is my family is taking a family trip to Las Vegas in March, and it's the same weekend as the race.
Oh, so. Hell yeah. That's going to be awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. So I've never been to a race there, you know, get to check off another track on my list. I'm sure the actual race will be terrible, but
Vegas is pretty good.
Vegas has been good.
Yeah. It's the only place these cars don't look like dog shit.
So yeah, that's the only concrete one.
That's awesome. That'll be fun.
Yeah, something different.
I've considered the idea of going down to Texas. That's my birthday weekend. And there's also a High Element show happening that weekend as well. So I'm kind of thinking about that. But, I don't know. Texas is certainly
Texas
not one
is
of
Texas.
The...
Texas, yeah. Yeah.
What you just said about Vegas that we were arguing about, we can all agree about Texas. It's not great. So not the best.
But going down
right,
is fun.
Yeah, for sure. Let's wrap it up for 2023. We'll do all sorts of season previews and all that bullshit once the new year starts. But thank you all for joining us on these many, many trips to Applebee's throughout 2023.
Seriously.
Definitely means a lot that anybody listens to this show, let alone the group we've grown over the last year. So give us a follow on all the socials. We'll probably be adding random shit throughout the next few weeks there. So, as always, meet me at Applebee's on Instagram. Meet me at the Bees on Twitter. Speedway screens on all the things. I will be active throughout the weeks. I still got plenty of shit to sell. And as always, speedwaytsj.etsy.com. True Love will also be busy on her Instagram. What's that
all,
handle?
All fucking year to prepare an actual pitch. Let's see. One last shot.
No, it's still my least favorite part of this entire podcast is self-promotion. So can go, you know, I don't know. I did go to the George Racing Hall of Fame over the weekend, so I'll post some shit from that.
Yeah, I've said this before, True Love always posts what we talk about on this show and what True Love does. She always posts a bunch of photos in the coming days, or the following days, that is. So if you want to know more about what she did, you'll actually be able to see it on her Instagram, and she's a great photographer, and it's really cool to see all that stuff. So make sure you give her a follow and go check it out. Snake Mountain True Love on Instagram. See, that's pretty good. It's not that fucking hard. Thanks, is it? It's not that hard to do.
It's way better when someone else does it for you.
You can follow me at RobMoats_unofficial on the internet. I just changed my Twitter handle to Scooters North. I'm going to try to do a little bit more video content on there and whatever, you know.
Sell again, some T-shirts, too.
Exactly, yeah. there are T-shirts available in the coming weeks. So they won't be ready in time for Christmas, but if you hate your family, you want to get them a terrible shirt, they'll be ready by late February or something. So you know, nothing like a late Christmas gift to say fuck you during these holiday times. My band, These Wild Plains, we're currently working on a record right now. We'll have some new stuff to show you pretty soon and also some shows to announce, blah, 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 blah. It is what it is. And again, I've said it 6 times on this particular episode already and in previous episodes, but thank you so much for listening. It means a lot. And I can't wait to meet more of you next year. And if you're at the Chili Bowl, hit me up through either the Applebee's account or through my own personal one or any of these guys. They'll link us up. Whatever. Yeah. Just come and say hi.
Relay the message.
Yeah. I'll be in Tulsa. I'll be getting drunk and hopefully with like Thomas Meserol or some cool shit like that. So.
Probably with Alex.
Yeah. With Alex, yeah. With our shirts off in the Expo Center. So.
Yeah, wearing stolen safety vests.
Shh.
I'm sorry.
I'm a real photographer.
You can edit that part out.
Yeah, I won't though. So yeah, thanks for listening. Sorry to anyone we've offended. Not really. It is what it is. We mean well. So.
All right, y'all, and Mike Harmon's got the check this week. So thank you, Mike Harmon.
Thanks, Mike.
We'll talk to y'all in 2024.
Fucking A. Merry Christmas, folks.